Welcome back to Seen It Before, where we're probably going to say something stupid about your favorite movie because we've seen it all before. I'm Danny.
Please stand by.
I'm back under no control of my own here. Let's just get over this.
Wait, you're saying like I kidnapped you?
Yeah.
You're full, like I have a gun to your head?
I'm a prisoner. You took my keys.
I took you. Where would I put them? Up your ass.
Up your own ass.
Me and Chris have this thing where we do like voices on for like COD.
I know.
Well, yeah, we have the Forrest Gump at in 2020 thing. Where it's like, they was really mad. And then and then we have Makarov, but like we don't know how to do a Russian accent, so we just say, yeah, stick a finger in his ass.
I think we have pretty much the same opinion on this movie, even though I am downplaying it really hard and how much I didn't like parts of this movie.
Why don't you go fuck yourself?
No, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm not at all.
But no, it's not a perfect movie by any means, but it's I liked it a lot.
It already almost made back its budget in the first weekend alone. So $291 million budget.
Fucking crazy, dude.
$235 million made this past weekend worldwide. That's wild.
What the it's just even funnier because like in an era like right now, Little Mermaid flopped, Indiana Jones flopped, Flash flopped. these giant movies that were supposed to at least make their budget back.
Steven Spielberg said this 10 years ago. If shit like this happens,
it's
gonna kill the industry.
It's sad to see one of his properties be a part of it, but like, you know, I think I'm so glad that like audiences seem to be wising up to like Disney specifically is gonna shovel you trash, and then people like Tom Cruise, who I've said countless times, right, cares about the audience. That's his thing, bro.
Here we go.
Okay.
You're gonna get on your Tom Cruise soapbox the whole time here today?
I'm just saying,
He does put out bangers.
Speaking about the movies, bangers.
And that's all we're gonna talk about. So just the movies. If they make the stunt category, Mission Impossible and John Wick 4, the top of that list to be nominated easily.
So are there any like award, like where would you know that award or that shot in John Wick 4 where like it's above the thing, it's one continuous shot?
Yeah.
Where is that more cinematography or directing? Or is it like more coordination?
That's cinematography mixed with stunts, obviously. But I think it's mainly cinematography, I would say.
Because I think that deserves a little like honorable mention. And I don't think they're probably not gonna win for cinematography because there's probably been a lot of other great.
Dude, that movie looks so good though.
Honestly? Are animated movies included in the cinematography? Because
no,
I think Spider-Verse could qualify.
Nah, it's just gonna get best animated movie.
Yeah.
And maybe a writing thing. It might get best screenplay. It might get something like that.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, this is a long intro.
This
is a very long intro, and we're gonna cut this right now. So let's get right to it.
So, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 has just released to the theaters, and like we said in the intro...
A week ago? About a week ago.
Okay, that was a 2015 meme. It is dead. Anyway, this movie's up front. I love that it's up front and like that it's like this is a Part 1 movie. We don't get that anymore. It's always like It Chapter 1. It was titled It before the end of the movie. Like,
we knew it was going to be a two-part.
I didn't know that.
Miniseries back from the 90s?
No, fuck that.
The Tim Curry one?
I didn't watch it. I watched it after the fact. I'm like, It Chapter 1 is way better.
Well, yeah, but like for the 90s as a TV miniseries, that's pretty fucking good. Yeah. All right.
Anyway, Dune, we thought, like, it's the way the movie is structured. I love structure.
Yeah, bro, that's up in a while, actually. So I'll let you go with it.
But, like, you know what I mean? So, like, it just ends. Same thing with Spider-Verse. It just ends. Multiple times, we thought.
God.
You know what I mean? That's the kind of, like, the only thing bringing that movie down. But this one is, like, Harry Potter Part 1. Or it's the Deathly Hallows Part 1. Yep. Like, it's, like, up front. This is going to be a two-part story. We're going to end on sort of a cliffhanger. And I'm so glad that we're kind of getting back to that. Because it's, like, I mean, I don't like feeling lied to.
We had that in Infinity War 2 and Endgame. We knew that was going to be a two-parter as well. And that
The thing is, though, it's like general audiences. You know what I mean? Like it was going to be Infinity War Part 1 and Part 2.
And
then they changed it halfway through. So like,
you should have expected, though, two Avengers movies in 2 years. Come on. You got to expect that shit.
I don't know.
All right. So my little quick tidbit about this movie. So it's a great suspenseful thriller. It's goofy, has great character development in parts. They make the movie work, the characters. And Ethan wanted to protect his friends at all costs. It's great.
Yeah.
It's just a game of cat and mouse, though, like for most of this movie, trying to find these keys. You know, it's I stole it, then you stole it, then she stole it. It's called capitalism. I knew it. Yeah.
Why'd you say
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
I don't want to remember that one line either. Like,
yeah. God. It's, am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong. Because part of that key kept getting stolen three different times. And they're like,
yeah, well, there's a few things. Yeah, it was hard to like follow the who had what at a certain time. But at the same time, though, it almost made it easier to follow, to remember where we were in the movie.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I'm thinking,
oh, they stole it here. That's at this part of the movie. So like, it was easy. You can write all my, like, I got a shit ton of notes for this. So it's like easy to see, to remember where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's gonna work out for it in the long run.
Exactly. All right, let's get into the nitty gritty of this movie now.
Yeah.
So we're starting off the 25-minute cold open. Really long cold open, starting with the submarine and everything underneath the ice in like where Antarctica, somewhere in like an Arctic area. We don't know where exactly.
Yeah, some sort of Russian sub.
But yeah, so they see this. It's all this like big AI, you know, looking machine thing that's in the bottom of this vessel, right?
It's in the sub.
Yes, it's in the sub.
So yeah, that's the whole thing where like. I'm confused a little bit when I was watching it. I was like confused. I'm like, is this like a separate ship that is like in the water? And like, it's obviously an AI thing fucking with them.
Yes.
It's like, oh, then the ship just disappeared, and you know, like the tools never lie to us. But like, that's cool.
Yes, that's a very cool cold open. Mainly, yeah, as you said, because it made it seem like there was another ship in their vicinity. And then it disappeared after they shot a rocket.
Maybe it has happened, but it's like actual like missions like this, like with like,
we'll never know.
Yeah, I imagine we wouldn't. It would be classified we'll or whatever. But like, that had to have been like a thing, right? When like technology, like this new technology for like detecting subs and shit, like sonar, was like improved like over time. There's got to be some people fucking with it, like hacking into their system and making them fire on themselves or something like that. Or
I mean, I'm sure it's a form of warfare, like an advanced warfare type of thing, but there's no way we're ever gonna know unless we were actually, you know,
yeah,
in special forces and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so
maybe Ethan Hunt knows, or Tom Cruise.
So speaking of Ethan Hunt, this is still the cold open, right? Where the Ethan Hunt looking for Ilsa thing, that was still the cold open, correct? I think it was.
I forget. I walked in the middle of that opening scene before it got.
Bro, you
got
to stop.
I was here, and I'm like, it was going to the theater.
Right over here.
Yeah, right over. Yeah, yeah. And then so I'm like, oh, it's only 15 minutes away, but I kept thinking the movie's at 3:15, but the movie's at 3.
Bro.
So I'm thinking, oh, I have till 3:30 because 15 minutes for commercials. So no, I showed up. So at like 3:05, I was like, fuck. And then so I ran over there. So yeah. So I missed all the previews, but you know, I walked in like maybe 2 minutes into the movie.
There's some good previews of mine. Some really good ones. Anyway.
but yeah, right off the bat, this seems like a more serious, it just feels different from like your average Mission Impossible movie. It's like, maybe it's the score. Maybe it's like the.
Let's preface this. I've only seen the first one and Ghost Protocol. Those are the only Mission Impossible movies I've seen, and then this new one.
So those ones, like especially Ghost Protocol, that just seems like a like just normal day. You know, like Ethan's just like he's in prison, and he's like, yeah, I'm just hanging out and stuff. And like the team rescues him. And, we got this terrorist guy coming. You know,
yeah.
It's just another Mission Impossible movie. This one feels different right off the bat. Maybe it's because I know that it's a part one, and I know it's a bigger story. Or I think it had a lot to do with the score, because the score felt more grandular. I don't know.
Okay.
And then also like, you know, Ilsa feeling like being like kind of like it's like they're reuniting again, but it's not like she showed like in Fallout, she just kind of showed, you didn't see it, but she shows up like
she fell out.
She shows up halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
So it's like she just kind of shows up like, oh, she's also on a different mission. But no, this one's more like Ethan's going to find her and stuff, and like she, you know, he thinks she's dead, and like you don't really know anything about Ilsa then, do you? Because she's in 5 and 6. Yeah, when he accepts his mission, which is also another scene I want to talk about. They say like the mission that led you into the IMF.
Yeah, was like, that ever a thing before, or is this specifically?
No, this is brand new. Okay. We have no idea. In the first one, he's just kind of part of the... He's just a guy.
I just couldn't remember if that was the second one or anything. I didn't know if there was like a flashback part in that. Okay.
So I have no idea who that girl he kills in the beginning. And I didn't know that they have a history. And it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, because they were going to make a whole big sequence of that taking place in 1989 with, you know, D.H. Tom Cruise, which, yeah, because you could do that, I guess.
They D.H.'d him?
They were
I thought they used a double.
No. They were going to. They talked about it as the cold open. They never did it because they got distracted. It would have been distracting to have Tom Cruise looking younger and everything. They didn't want to detract from the story.
That's ironic.
I know, right?
Considering last week's episode.
Yeah.
Where they have a whole 20-minute intro with a de-aged actor.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. But yes. Fuck off. I was in San Diego. I got tan, baby. Anyway.
Yeah, you are tan today.
Fucking tan. Anyway. And also sunburned on my feet. Yeah.
I was gonna
say it wasn't even San Diego. That was in Long Island.
Anyway, so I like this like little scene where like he's training, or he's kind of giving tips to this guy that's like, he's like, what's your name? He's like, well, you haven't asked me the code word or some shit or whatever. Gives his code name and he says, you know, do you choose to accept it? You know, all that
stuff. That was the part of the cold open. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, because they always have to start off with
the mission. The Ilsa scene was right after the cold open. Got it.
Right.
All right.
I like this. They're kind of bringing back because you haven't seen three.
Fuck. Nope.
In three, he's training, or he's like kind of the mentor to Carrie Russell.
That was the first one with Simon Pegg, right? Three.
Yeah, he's only in there for like maybe 5 minutes.
Okay,
because it was J.J. Abrams and their friends and blah, blah.
Yeah.
That one he was his only student he approved for the field duty was Carrie Russell, and then on like one of her missions, she gets caught by the villain of the movie, and then it's a really heartbreaking scene, honestly, because it's like she has this thing that's going to blow up in her head, like a little like detonator or whatever. His plan is like as he grabs her and they escape in the helicopter, he has to kill her with the AED, you know, so it fries the thing in her brain and then bring her back.
Jeez.
Bring her back. That's why I wear the headphones.
Yes,
good, I can hear that it went out.
Good for you.
He's gonna bring her back with the paddles again.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I forgot how it was. She's like, I'm gonna zap you, and she's like, wait, Ethan, thank you for saving me. He's like, yeah, no problem. And then as he's like saying, yeah, what? And then she dies.
So kind of like a Black Bolt in Multiverse of Madness type of thing, where his head just kind of like implodes and his eye just like,
yeah, a little bit, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. But it's not even that graphic, not it's that just graphic, like her eye just goes that
way. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So but his whole thing was like he failed his student, and I like how they're bringing that back now because he's still kind of giving tips to the new guys, and obviously in this movie Hayley Atwell, he's sort of quasi training her through the movie. Like he's like, you need to do this, you need to do that, and giving her tips and stuff. So I like that they're bringing that back. I like that aspect of Ethan.
Yeah. All right.
That was a long way of explaining that.
Carriage. So yeah,
he's back from the first one.
He's back from the first one.
This is the first reappearance of him because he's just left the movies.
He's been since then. Wherever.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's a meeting with Kittredge and a few other officials and all that stuff.
Yeah, all the community, I think they called him.
Yes, and then there's this random dude who's looking like sketchy as hell in the corner. He walks in late.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, this dude's totally a terrorist.
Yeah, absolute terrorist. And you know, it's Tom Cruise.
Oh, they bring him back the mask because they didn't really do that in the last ones.
So
which was like the whole thing for like a while.
It was a really cool thing though. It was a nice scene.
I love like their relationship because it's like Kittredge is sort of looking out for himself, but he knows Ethan's a good asset for his job and keeping the world safe and stuff. But it's like at the same time he's like a total dick. They hate each other and they're dicks to each other. So it's like, it's nice to see like, it's like, Ethan, and also in that scene, I'm not sure if you can see, his eye was twitching so fucking hard.
I wasn't noticing.
It was like whenever you talk, we just go like this, like you could see like a vein popping.
Okay.
But he's like, maybe it's just like a thing that he has. I doubt that he like, they like made it look that way, but it's like, he looked on edge. Ethan looked very confident because he's fucking Tom Cruise. And the whole scene really worked because he's like, you're going to fail, Ethan. You're going to fail. This is something different. And then Tom Cruise is like, I'm Ethan fucking Hunt, so...
So, fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, he gets the lowdown, and it's like, it's AI.
Yeah, he gets the lowdown, and then he gets the intel that he has to go to the airport, right? I believe.
Yeah, because...
Or am I skipping over something?
Well, they figured out that for some reason, somehow, one of the keys... They're on the random people.
Yeah, they got separated.
Yeah.
So one of them is on its way to... on its way to the airport, or it's in a briefcase in the airport or something like that.
It's on this. It is in this guy's pocket because Haley Atwell pickpockets him at the thing.
Yeah, but I think they originally thought it was in a briefcase, though. That's how that briefcase thing came into play. Or was it always
a briefcase thing? I know there's a suspicious bag that was sort of like a... No, that was something that Gabriel put on the
plane. That was just something separate? Okay.
Which also, I'm a little confused about that, too, because it's like...
Right? Well, let's get through to the scene first. Ethan has to get the key. Banji and Luther are there, so they're helping him, you know, do recon and everything in the airport.
The guys in the chair. Yeah,
the guys in the chair.
Which is kind of funny because it's like, I feel bad for Ving Rhames because it's like, he started off as the guy in the chair. He was the computer dude. And then Banji comes in because he's like, Ving Rhames is like the complete opposite of what you think like a hacker would be.
Yeah.
Which I think is funny. But like Simon Pegg fits that bill more.
I wouldn't even picture that. So Simon Pegg is that, but you know.
Really a pasty white guy, skinny and...
I guess.
I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. So he runs into Haley Atwell. Her character, Grace.
Is that even her name?
We don't know.
She's like, let's say it's Grace.
She's very, you know... She keeps to herself. She doesn't like let anyone in.
Yeah.
She's very mysterious. That's the word I was looking for.
Which is kind of funny. So it's like, well, yeah. So I think it was kind of worked both ways because it's like she's obviously at the end of the movie she ends up being a part of the team.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a life to go back to, really.
So. Yeah. And I'm going to say this right now. She's the saving grace of this film.
Continue.
Okay. Okay. Sorry, I had that written in my notes, and I had to fit it in somewhere. She gets the key. Tom Cruise and her are kind of walking around, and then there's all the agents are coming in to try to surround them. It's a all-against-one type scenario. And then we see Gabriel. He disappears.
He's just hanging out and, like...
Yeah, he disappears all the time. Then Banji gets this thing where there's like a bomb, and they're trying to Luther's trying to keep Ethan out of this bomb situation that could possibly go nuclear.
Which I don't understand why they do that. They said something where like it was because it might be the AI fucking with them because they know it's an AI and then like it's gonna mess. You know, it's gonna play around with pretend that they're different people, and also there's a whole like little cat and mouse chase between. There's like these two like kind of. Regular cop guys or detectives or whatever that are Shea Whigham, they're chasing after him, and he's like, and they're using deep fake technology to put Ethan's face on other people.
That's really weird.
Which I thought
it's weird.
That's exactly what would happen though if like you had this stuff and you needed to be covert, you would just make other people look like
you. I guess you don't need to explain it because it's like an action summer blockbuster. It's fine, but like. If you're trying to make this a serious movie, you got to kind of get into this a little more if you're, I don't know. All this AI stuff kind of went secondary to me in this movie to Gabriel. I don't know why. It very much did not
seem... Well, that's how he has the upper hand on everything.
Yeah, this AI is bigger.
I agree. I don't exactly understand what the AI is like.
Like for part two and everything, yeah.
It's throughout the movie, like... He doesn't have control over the AI because he's trying to get the key to control it.
Yeah, but like that might not work. So like,
but like at the same time, the AI is protecting him, and they say like the chosen black angel or something like that.
I don't.
I'm like, well, why is he special? Like, what did he do? And who has control of the AI now?
And I'm just like, what the fuck?
I hope all these answers or these questions are answered later on because like. I don't know. It worked in like J.J. Abrams did the same thing in MI3 where like the whole thing they're looking for is called the rabbit's foot.
But how did Gabriel?
No fucking idea what it is.
Yeah.
They never explain it. Yeah. But it doesn't matter because it works.
Now, Gabriel's the guy that killed this girl in that flashback. And he has reappeared after, 25 somewhat years, 30 years, whatever it happens to be in this movie's time frame.
I have no idea who she is.
Yeah. We have no idea who she is. We have no idea who Gabriel is, but we know he's. the bad guy. But how did he just disappear? How did he just disappear in that one scene where Ethan takes his glasses off? He's just gone. What the fuck was that?
I don't know. Tom Cruise does the same thing in MI4. Like,
okay. Well,
I think it's just that's something you just got to let go. Like, it's just
all right.
Super cool, speed. I don't know.
Cool. All right, just make sure. Because I did just say that about the other thing. So, yeah, all right, fair. Grace betrays Ethan, and she's like,
back and forth with him, and I like the little cat and mouse thing, you know?
So she gets the key, gets on a plane to Rome, and disappears. And Ethan is left, like, with all his agents chasing him, and eventually runs on the roof. I'm just like, okay, he just got up to the roof. He's running across the airport roof somehow.
Also, I love how, like, right before, because, like, you know, he sees Gabriel, or he sees a glimpse of him, he's like, and he doesn't even know for sure that it's Gabriel. But what he is sure of is that this mission is over. He is fucking terrified of this guy. And I love that, because, like, you've never seen
Ethan Hunt be terrified. That was very well done. That's what I was talking about, one scene. That's what I was talking about. But, like, it was very well done and very, you know, psychologically.
Yeah, because, like,
it's suspenseful.
This guy did something so bad to him, and he
scares Ethan.
Yeah, it scares Ethan. So I love when they do that, because when you have a fearless character, now you have something to be scared of. They just do it really well.
Yeah.
And, you know, but so then he tells Benji and Luther to not rendezvous. We are not meeting up again. This mission is going away. So then this is a cool little segue. It's a cool segue to get him to be on his own looking for Grace. And also back to the bomb thing.
We don't see it until he shows up in Rome. So.
Well, I'll get to that, because I fucking love that scene. But back to the bomb thing, though. Benji diffuses it by using all these riddles and stuff.
Riddles, the AI is kind of like getting to know these people.
Right.
It's like, oh.
Like, oh, it's learning about it's these, learning. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I just like that little thing, but, like, also, why was it there? You know what I mean?
It's just like a MacGuffin type.
It kind of seems like, but the thing is, like, it kind of just seems like Gabriel's, like, inserting himself into the whole situation. Grace is working for the White Widow. White Widow is working for Kittredge. Kittredge is either working for himself or Carrie Elwes, who is working with Gabriel, or who wants to work with Gabriel.
I couldn't follow it all, so, like,
it's all, you know, so, and then Ethan's just kind of a wrench thrown in all of this.
As usual.
Yeah, because he's a super spy.
Super spy. So, I learned everything. That's when everybody got out. So, Rome. Now, Grace shows up in Rome, and she gets arrested, or not arrested, but, like, taken to the police headquarters or whatever, and asked about the key, right? Is it the key, or she asked about something else? Or
she gets caught because of her passports.
Right, her passports, yeah.
And I thought, so what she does is, like, she's like, can I see? And I thought for a second, I find out later she steals a paperclip, but I thought she, like, she swiped her thumb over her, like, her picture. She's like, ma'am, this isn't you in this picture. She's like, oh, are you sure? And I thought she, like, swiped.
That would have been funny as hell.
And so, like,
the cutout.
I don't know. Like, if she's like, are you sure? Like, and like, it reveals or erases portions of the picture that make her, that would turn it into her face. Mm-hmm. So, but it just wasn't that. It was just, she just stole a paperclip. I'm like, oh, I'm thinking too far into this.
You're expecting way too much.
Then Ethan crashes the party.
He's the lawyer.
Yeah, he's the lawyer. And they just make their way to escape. And then, but she ends up getting out of Ethan's hands and stealing a cop car, which I thought was awesome. And then he steals a really shitty police bike. And I thought how annoying it was with the big pole in the back of him. He's like, he has to drive with, like, the fucking light. And then they end up getting running into he catches up to
Pom Clemente's character.
Dude, I love her. I think they call her Paris.
Yes.
She was great too. And she really didn't say any words in the, you know, she was great. Also,
she never really say anything as Mantis either, but she's still she's a facial actor. She does really well with that stuff.
They gave her just enough for her, like, little mini arc that I like, just enough scenes,
just enough to get by. And she's not dead yet. So the police car crashes, and all the agents show up and everything, and then they end up getting in the police car again, right? And Tom Cruise ends up handcuffing himself to her,
right? And I love this little bit. He handcuffs the wrong arm. He handcuffs her his left arm.
He's supposed
to
be driving.
Right.
He's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, so, but, like, and it's like, This is the part where I started to see, oh, Grace is just a normal citizen. She's just a pickpocket. And I'm thinking, oh, thank God. We're not going to have this super completely just amazing, you know, female character that can do everything better than Tom Cruise. And I'm like, oh, fucking finally. Like, she still can do stuff. It's just, but she's not as amazing as what we've built up six movies for Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt to be.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Ilsa was a different thing because, like, she was already an operative and she was, you know, she had a very specific style, kind of like a Black Widow style when she's fighting.
Yeah.
So she was, you know, and I loved Ilsa too. This movie, this franchise, it's weird that we have to kind of say this, but like this has good, strong female characters in it.
Yeah.
So especially Grace, and we'll get to Ilsa in this movie, but because, you know, she eventually comes back, but then they had this whole, also, sorry to kind of take over the conversation.
No, you're fine.
This whole car chase through Rome.
That's what I want to talk about anyway. So
it was this. I'm pretty sure they used the same steps in Fast X.
Probably. I mean, it's very widely known place in Rome.
So. Yeah, but it's just funny. There's like two giant action movies, both take in 2023.
I mean,
take place in Rome on the same steps, and it's a car chase too.
Mission Impossible was supposed to come out last year, so I mean, it makes sense. But yes, they had to change cars into the yellow Fiat.
Yeah.
And then they roll down these steps.
Yeah, they go down the,
and they end up in the wrong seat in the other seats. And that was hilarious. How the hell does that even happen? But I didn't even question. I was like, this is great. I don't even care. That was fantastic.
They're making, Christopher McQuarrie is able to make this so entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a one-to-one comparison for this particular scene with Fast X. And that one, I'm just kind of, they're just doing weird acrobatics with cars that are completely unrealistic. But, like, a little tiny Fiat going at a high speed, flipping over on the steps, that's insane, but still kind of believable. You can see that kind of happening.
Yeah, I guess.
You know what I mean? And it's like, and they had a little quirk. Like,
Paris coming in the big SWAT truck behind them.
You know, like, she just jumps. Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Legendary.
So just a great entertaining scene. And then we get kind of like a Grace doesn't know what the fuck she wants to do. So she's just kind of going around in the circle and like burning out and doing donuts and stuff to, you know, cause now they got police and on both sides of plus they have like, Pom.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's like, just fucking, you know, give me the wheel. And like they team up for a little bit and they get, she's got the pedals. He's got the steering wheel and they, you know, badass scene where they go back. It's just so entertaining, and then they get another car.
And apparently, it's the way they filmed it. It actually makes sense with the roads and everything for Rome. And I'm just like,
they looked into that.
Yeah, like people looked into that. And it actually makes sense the way they did it. So,
And there's also just another thing is like obviously all of these particular stunts are done for real because Tom Cruise is very adamant about that. Obviously,
crazy. Yes,
he's crazy. But then if you go to a scene, like a car chase scene.
In Fast X
or Indiana Jones, it's all green screen, all CGI.
They have models and everything, but like it's just not the same.
It doesn't feel as visceral and like you're not actually there like I was with this one. And like it could look exactly the same, but there's just something about it that this one just looks more real. I can't really explain it. I'm just more invested in this. Maybe it's because I know it's real. Maybe that.
So I mean,
maybe you could lie to me that Indiana Jones was filmed for real in the... I don't know.
Yeah, true.
But...
So they eventually end up getting away in this car chase. And now they realize... They talked about it at the lawyer's office, but Grace knows there's a party in Venice the next night. So they have to get to Venice to meet the person who's trying to buy the key, I believe, which ends up being the White Widow.
Yeah, the White Widow.
So, yeah. Which
you don't know her.
I don't know if she's Fallout.
Yeah, she came from the last movie.
Vanessa Kirby, yeah.
And so she plays a really small role in that one, too. Because it's kind of like she flirts with Ethan, and she's like, I'm a nuclear weapons buyer, and I'm just a buyer. I'm a middleman. Like, okay. So, but she calls him John Lark.
John Lark.
No, Lark, because in the last one, he has to pretend to be this guy named John Lark, who's a terrorist buying.
I swear she said Lark multiple times.
She's got an accent. It's Lark. I've seen the movie.
Hey, I saw the movie too, my
look
dude.
Look at in Fallout.
Oh, you're talking about Fallout.
They literally say John Lark.
But I'm talking about in this movie.
Why would she call him Locke if his last
name I don't know. Lark. I swear to God.
Bro.
I swear to God.
Anyway,
that's just sticking out to me.
So
I don't know why.
All right. Like that little plot line is still like, oh, they just never resolved that. So like, it's kind of a joke now.
Yeah.
So I like that. Like, we're having continuity, and that was never the case with the Mission Impossible movies up until like 4.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And the AI put together this party, which is crazy by itself.
Yeah.
Like how did it invite all these people to this one big place that probably is a gajillion dollars to sell out. It's a little unbelievable. Like, all right, whatever, we'll go with it.
Here's the thing. I like the cool, like, kind of midpoint reveal here, where they're like, they realize, like, they're having a conversation. Where's the key? What is the entity? Blah blah blah. And then obviously the whole thing is the entity. Like, all it's on all the computers. How did it get there? Can it hack?
Well, yeah, it's an AI that, dude, it can like hack a submarine and.
Well, because we find out later it was put in there by Cary Elwes and whoever he's working with. I think it's the U.S. intelligence.
I don't remember that.
But on a Russian sub. So I'm just a little confused on the logistics. They might have gone really fast with how it's explained in the movie. I might have missed it. But it's like a lot of this stuff is not exactly linking up. It's like, why would a U.S. intelligence director? You sure he's probably making shady deals, which obviously he was in this movie. But why would he officially on paper give the AI that, or I guess he built it, or they built it and put it as a trial run in the submarine in the beginning?
Yeah, maybe.
I'm just confused.
I don't know. It's very loose, and it wasn't really, maybe it was said, but we missed it, as you said, but that's another part of this.
I hope it gets like, an answer, because this is a part one of a part two. So yeah. It's like, this movie is fine knowing, or you know, with the knowledge that we might get it later. You know what I mean? But the core of this movie is entertaining enough. Like, it tells a complete-ish story. You know what I mean?
So now Gabriel is also at this party, and he's explaining to Ethan, it's like, you can choose one of these people to die, Ilsa or Grace.
Right.
And he knows, because the AI is like, he's like sleeping in a coffin with AI looking over his face so he can see all the different moves it's going to make that Ethan could possibly make. And I'm just like, okay, that's a bit of a fucking stretch, but all right, we'll go with it.
He's
more suspense for the scene, because then it turns into a foot chase through the streets of Venice. And...
Right.
Yeah. So
which is another great scene. All these
very
action scenes are
scene.
So fucking good.
It's just another thing of Tom Cruise running.
So here's the thing, though. Like we said before, we don't know if Gabriel can control the AI.
No.
Right now, we just think they're two separate entities.
It's probably using Gabriel. That's what I assume it's doing. It's using him.
Oh, that'd be interesting. Like, it's so smart.
It's giving him all these options of what Ethan could do, but really it's pulling the strings on Gabriel. That's what I'm thinking.
The thing is, though, why is the AI singling out Ethan? To the AI, all he is just a really good operative.
Maybe it sees him as a threat somehow. I don't know.
Well, he is.
Maybe its actual plan is going to be revealed in 2, obviously. So maybe it knows Ethan.
They've got to do some sort of connecting emotional tissue to. It's got, like, Gabriel's got to be involved. Ethan's got to be involved to connect it to Gabriel, so I can see that. But it's like, you know what I mean? Like, why would the AI want Ethan, or no, White Widow, to kill one of two girls that Ethan cares about specifically?
Yeah,
that just feels weird. So there's got to be like an explanation,
direction maybe
to back off.
It's playing a chess match with itself on how what Ethan's gonna do. I think like it has all these options that it thinks Ethan's going to make, or actually it knows Ethan's going to make. So I
trust these filmmakers a little more. And these writers a little more than other people.
Yeah.
But still, like, that's kind of a hard plot line if they, you know, like, I'm not 100% sure if they caught that, you know?
All right. So the chase scene ends with like Tom Cruise. Oh, yeah, really cool thing. Benji is talking to Tom Cruise in his ear, mm-hmm. and the AI takes over in Benji's voice.
Yeah, so like, telling even him that's not me.
Oh, go right.
Go right. Left. Yeah.
And it can't hear other Benji, of course. So like Benji had to like smash his computer and everything, and it was a really intense scene.
I love that.
Loved that.
Yeah.
Like this and the airport scene are the two best scenes in this movie.
I think it's the AI is smart enough because like at first my like where I would go to logically is like if I'm the AI, I would want to always mess with their technology and make it so they can't use the technology. But then that just means like they know one thing for sure is that they can't use the technology. But if it's kind of intermittent and like sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, you don't know for sure if the AI is messing with it or not. So I like that bit, like, because originally I thought, I'm like, that doesn't make any logical sense, but then it does. So
yeah,
I don't, it's maybe they weren't thinking about that, but I thought that was a cool idea.
So it leads to Gabriel and Ilsa fighting on one of the little bridges over there, and well,
yeah,
she did.
Yeah, Grace ends up having a fight real quick, and then Ilsa's like, I'm oh fuck, I didn't say my favorite like, or I got like such a grin on my face when at the end of the end of the Venice stuff, Ethan's just like, oh, I lost Grace after she locks him to a to the steering wheel and on the train and stuff, and then he's like, oh fuck, I'm fucked. And then Benji's like, Ethan, we're here, get in the van. And then it's just a silent kind of thing where Ethan's looking at Benji, he smiles back, he's looking at Luther, he smiles back, and then it pans over to Ilsa and she's just like sorry, I know you told me to stay dead, but I'm not dead, I'm helping out whether you like it or not. And he's just like, all right, you know, I love that. I just love, and also there's like, you know, I don't see this good enough.
Character moments.
Yes, exactly,
like I was talking about earlier. Yeah
you don't see this enough, but it's like the visual acting.
Mm-hmm.
There's no dialogue being spoken. They do this again, I think, later with him and Grace, where it's just like they give kind of like a knowing look, which is like, when she's like about to jump in that in the train scene, she's like,
okay, you're getting ahead of yourself again.
Yeah.
Hey, calm down. So, so Ilsa dies on the bridge, and then there's this like, it's a little lull for a second.
Right, and so it's like, well, you don't really have an emotional connection to Ilsa.
No,
I sort of do because I've seen the two movies.
Yeah,
I didn't exactly feel her loss like I wanted to, and I think it was because she's not really in this movie. She has two full movies of character development.
She disappears for a while in this one. She's there in the beginning and then gone for an hour. So I mean,
if this story wasn't so massive, where they have to break it up into two,
the scale is huge on this story. So I mean, like,
yeah. So like this would be a cool, like, if she was part of the movie and then, or part of like the whole movie leading up to the end, and then she dies at like the climax, or like the last thing, that would make it feel better.
Yeah.
But it's like this one, she's just like, she's there for like three scenes, she's dead. And she has kind of a lackluster fight. Didn't really like that. So that's honestly probably my biggest criticism of the movie, because it's a main character.
Yeah. Yeah, but now they're all kind of hiding out for a little bit, and Grace gets the choice to become a Mission Impossible agent, whatever it is.
MIF.
MIF.
Impossible Mission Force.
I am.
It's a dumb name, but yeah.
That Kittredge could help her out, basically. Yeah. And he'll, yeah, she'll just have to say that Ethan told him her this or whatever. Yeah, whatever. The whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole spiel. I don't really care.
You're such not a fan of this.
I'm not. No, this movie, I am a fan of this movie.
No, I mean the franchise.
Just the franchise, I'm not. But, so now, that leads to them finding out that there's a deal going on a train in the Swiss Alps, I want to say it is.
Something like that. It's not a train.
All right, somewhere in Europe, on a train with mountains around it. I'm going to say
this is the Orient Express, because I'm like, huh, murder on the Orient
Express. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it is on the Orient Express. So, the plan is for Grace to use a face mask covering to look like the White Widow and make the deal.
Oh no, the mask breaks. The mask
gear breaks for Ethan's character because he was supposed to be the bodyguard.
Oh yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it broke then.
Oh well.
So it was all on Grace, and she's just like, I can't do this. I can't fucking do this.
Which again is another callback to Ghost Protocol when the mask machine broke when they were supposed to do this really high risk.
Yep. Interrogation. Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. So yeah, she gets on the train and Tom Cruise is riding through the mountains trying to find a way to jump on the train. Gabriel the AI must have thought of this, so it tells Gabriel to make the train go full throttle and therefore screwing up Tom Cruise's jump or Ethan's jump onto the train.
Yep.
The one thing I know, well, here's one thing I found actually. Vanessa Kirby has blue eyes.
Yeah, so they put contacts on her.
Brown eyes.
They put brown contacts on Vanessa Kirby in the movie. That's how you can tell them apart.
Oh, yeah. But, no one notices. Not even, her brother is on the train with her. How does she not notice that it's not blue eyes? It's a little bit of a thing. I'm just come on.
Well, I don't know. I don't know, the color of my mom's eyes. You know?
What?
Do you know the color of your brother's eyes?
Yeah.
Weirdo.
Is my brother.
I don't know that shit. I don't even really know the color of Sep's eyes. Maybe green.
She's going to be so mad.
Yeah.
She's going to be real mad at you, man.
The logo of this movie, it looks like it's like a hazel eye. Now I'm thinking about it. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Like the title card at the end of the first trailer. Because I just saw it.
I didn't think about that.
I'm such a fucking nerd. Anyway.
All right. So now let's get to the big stunt that everyone was talking about.
No, before I want
to. Oh, you want to go before that? Okay.
Because there's a whole 20 minutes where Ethan's not even really part of it. And I thought that was fucking genius. You have the main star and you're letting all these supporting characters be as strong as they can be by putting them in a really tight situation and scene. So you got Hayley Atwell, who's fucking brand new to this movie, mm-hmm. coming in, pretending to be this arms dealer, talking to Kittredge, this is him coming back from the first one, and they have a very intense scene where she's you feel for her because she's like, I was just a pickpocket last week. Now I'm.
And she changed the bank account to her bank account, which is hilarious.
Yeah, so it's now there's a paper trail for her. Mm-hmm. But then she decides not to accept it. And then there's also the back end scene of Gabriel talking to Cary Elwes.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you're the only one who knows where it's located, this in the submarine and the key, or where the AI thing, the original source code is. He's like, yeah. Kills him. Then you have the thing with Benji and Ethan. There's back, and that's super background of this whole 20 minutes. And I just fucking love that. It's like, you don't see it. It's like these movies, you think that these movies really rely on Tom Cruise, but no, everybody else is elevated as well.
Yeah, especially this movie. And if that's the direction they're willing to go, I'm with it.
Yeah,
I'm
well, they're making it more of a team franchise. I know it's always been like that, but you used to just go for Ethan or Tom Cruise, basically. What's the next crazy stunt he's going to do?
Maybe Ving Rhames, but
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is that the thing? He's barely in this one, too.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And I really like Benji's more part of it, too. I really liked Ilsa, though.
You liked her in the last. You didn't really get a chance to like her in this one.
Yeah, I just know what she can do, and I know how fun she can be. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that we gained Grace. She's great, but I'm a little upset we lost Ilsa.
Saving Grace. Okay, back to the
stunt. The big stunt.
That was literally just a ramp. He literally just went off a ramp, but it looked pretty good. It looked like he went up the hill. It was nicely done. I think he actually jumped off at 6 times.
Oh
he
shit!
He did that stunt 6 times.
Oh, I thought it was just a one time. Okay, cool.
No, he did this on 6 times.
But you can really tell, again, he did this for real because when he's, even in the actual movie, the one shot that they really got is his face is flapping and stuff. And he's having a hard time delivering the lines. I'm trying,
They could have just done it in one of those containers too, where they decided to actually do it.
Well, no, that's not Tom Cruise's style. Exactly. That's what he does. Saying.
They could have done it that way. It wouldn't have been the same, but you know.
The basic big action scenes that he's done in all these movies, right? So out of all of them, where does this one rank? Or what's your ranking for all of them?
I don't know. The plane one is still probably the best one.
Okay.
I don't know all of them. I know mainly the plane one, this one, and the one in Ghost Protocol. Fuck.
Ghost Protocol is the one where he's climbing the building.
Yeah.
Five is the Rogue Nation is the plane. Six is the, well, there's actually a few. There's the helicopter thing at the end where he's climbing up the helicopter.
Fallout, so.
And then there's another one where he's skydiving and then the cameraman is skydiving with him, which is sort of similar to what they did here. Two, I think the craziest thing is he's just free climbing a rock wall or like a, and then three, yeah, it was just him. I think it was him just kind of getting knocked back into a car. There's a really cool shot where like, but also the physics don't really work.
No.
Because he's running, so I'll try to, at your perspective. So he's running towards the camera, and then a car's here, and then a rocket comes from over here, hitting another car in the background, and then he, or no, no, it hits like, he gets knocked in, he gets knocked in the opposite way.
Okay.
Like where the, like the so thing it, blows up, and he goes like towards it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, eh. Well, anyway.
Well, this one I think is.
Oh, and then the first one, obviously, with the.
That was just classic, but that one's not a great one. This is probably my second favorite stunt.
Yeah, I think the most dangerous was probably Burj Khalifa, the building one. I was.
I don't know. The plane was pretty friggin' dangerous.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because he's alone up there.
He's on wires for sure, but like it's just.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so
still really cool.
The scene was really cool. Anyway, so. Let's kind of skip through the end of this movie. It's just action, action, you know, fighting on top of the train, woo.
But you're missing like the whole like the thing. The reason
what part?
The reason that it make that this particular fight on the train is so like much better compared to the indie scene.
Okay.
They're not really worried about or okay, so they're worried about like the tunnel.
Okay.
Right? Like they have to kind of duck on the tunnel. That's the thing. But in this one, I didn't realize that they have like little obstructions covering the train under the tunnel or like the lights. So they're dodging underneath the tunnel as well. Like that's another layer.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, there's like lights right above it. So if they're in the middle of the train, they're gonna get crushed by the light. So they keep rolling back and forth.
I didn't see that.
Okay. And there's like little like bars. So you got the train coming through. There's little things on both sides of the train that cover it. So they gotta kind of hop over it or roll out of the way of that. All while Gabriel's got these two knives and he's slashing while he's crawling towards them. I thought that was just so cool. And then Ethan falls off the edge and he's like, you know, right next. They're just looking for ways to make it more innovative than like your average fight scene on the train.
Okay, yeah. I'm not going to knock all the stunt work that went into this movie. It's great. You don't have to sell me on that. It's great.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's more than just a fight scene.
Yes. There's more depth to it. Then there's the whole thing. Oh, the bridge blows up. Oh, so they got to stop the train. That's on a runaway train.
Mm-hmm. And again, I thought this scene was just going to be your average, like,
what's his face?
Fanfare.
Before that, Gabriel ends up just like diving off into a truck
because he times it perfectly.
He times it perfectly. Because AI. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, back
so to he. But it's like at the same time, he must. AI must have like deduced that he's going to speed up the train because that's going to change your velocity, obviously. And when you jump, you're still going this way. So you got to like, if the truck's here, the train's coming this way. You got to jump like here. So you jump this way, and then but you're still going this way. So you got to land in the truck.
Math.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I just I don't know. Really cool how they did that.
Very very.
I assume the AI thought of everything.
Yes, it did, but obviously not enough for Gabriel to get the key. So Ethan gets the key, and the train ends up. They're running through train cars, trying to get back up onto the surface. Oh, by the way, Gabriel knew Paris was going to betray him, so she stabbed him.
But I like that though, because it's like he's smart enough. He's not just going to be. Betrayed or that's not he's not even gonna let that impetus happen. He's just gonna fucking take care of it.
Yep.
I love that.
And I feel like she's gonna come back at some point. Maybe not in Dead Reckoning Part 2, but maybe the next one after that.
Yeah. So which I'll talk to you later about or at the end of the podcast about where this franchise is gonna go because he's not done after Part 2.
We know. He says that. But okay, so yeah, there's this one scene where they're just hanging, and then there's a random piano above them. I'm just like, no fucking way. Come on, man.
Why is there an entertainment car? Piano? It's the entertainment car. What do you want?
It was no. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying like, come on, man.
Oh yeah, it's just another thing. Yeah, no, I totally get it.
Your fucking piano. But yeah, so they get the key, they save Paris, and then it kind of just ends with like a look under the water, the sub just hanging out just in the Arctic somewhere.
Right, because that they find out that's where they need it, because like, you know, her last breaths are like, it's in the ocean, it's a submarine.
Except, you know?
Or, but she's in French. I don't
know. Yeah, whatever.
I can't believe you skipped over the fucking train car scene. I love that scene.
We talked about it.
There's a lot of beats in there, okay? First of all, they made it realistic with the train, or like the engine falling off. Okay. They blow up the bridge.
Yeah, I said that.
But like, it's just the slow motion of the train stopping. And also every train car, like they're flipping up like each car and stuff. And they got to do like this obstacle course thing. And they're all going through. And Tom Cruise is helping out Grace because she's like, she's trying to figure this shit out too. And she's like, you know, I think she's wearing heels too in the movie, in this whole action scene.
Maybe.
But then you get like the kitchen car where like the oil is falling out of the air or the fryer and the
lights wild. On and it that blows was some up wild stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So that it blows up in back of them. Yeah,
they went through a bunch of cars.
No, but then it's like, and then the piano thing, I was like, you need to let go. Like you need to, or it's like, you need to jump. You need to jump. She's like, uh-huh. Jump. And she's like, yeah, I know. It's so like, you know, it's like, you, that's how people would react.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. I just love that. And then they also do this really cool editing trick where it's like, Pom helps them out like right at the last minute, like kind of a little bit of a deus ex machina.
Yeah, yeah.
Catches them, and then she's like, I can't hold you any longer. And it's a close up on Ethan's hand. And then it just cuts to the train car falling. And I'm like, oh shit. But then they're fine.
Yeah.
But I liked it because as the train's falling, it reveals them. So it's like two and one. I just like that. Anyway, yeah. That's all I wanted to say. It's
typical, yeah.
Another great bits of like,
oh no, it's great.
Innovative. Actually, because this could have been so cookie cutter, but it wasn't.
Stunts.
Need nominations.
If we haven't said enough about the stunts in the last 2 months, or 4 months.
Good stunt movies.
There's a lot of good stunt work out there, and it doesn't get recognized enough. So, Dead Reckoning Part 2.
Right.
Where do you think this is going?
I think, well, obviously, an Endgame.
I've already talked about where I think it's going, so.
Wait, what'd you say again?
The AI and how it's kind of using Gabriel to its advantage, and
gonna
like screw him over somehow, and then it's gonna
See, the thing is though, they gotta it would be hard to make the AI a character.
I think somebody else is probably pulling the strings behind it. I don't think it's just Gabriel. We just haven't met this person yet.
Yeah,
maybe it's somebody close to Ethan still. We don't know.
Well, I think a smart thing to do, if that was the case, they would introduce that somebody in this movie.
Maybe somebody in this movie.
Who could it be?
I don't know.
I don't think it's the White Widow. I don't a curveball they could do is Haley Atwell, but I don't think they'd do that.
No, she's not smart enough for that.
Or maybe she's just so good at playing dumb.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a stretch either way.
Watch me, Ilsa.
Bro,
she's not dead,
bro. No,
or Henry Cavill comes back from the dead,
bro. Wasn't he just like a henchman?
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, yeah, he was John Lark. That was the whole thing. But the one thing I remember that movie is just
Mustache Gate. Oh, you mean loading his fist?
Yeah, he loads his fist, and then Conan pointed this out on the talk show. He's like, you pumped your arm so hard that you grew a beard. Like, if you go back, watch the trailer, it fucking, like, it's, like, clean shaven, but he's got the mustache, and then he does this, and a 5 o'clock shadow just appears on his face. It's fucking awesome, dude. Fuck, man. I mean, I loved Henry Cavill. Oh, I just wish he could stick around for the other movies. But he gets, the way he dies is, like, he gets, like, a fucking industrial hook into his forehead. He's fucking dead.
Oh, he did. Yeah. He did. Unless his brain got into the AI.
I don't know.
That's a little too sci-fi. Anyway, well, we'll see where it goes.
This is Indiana Jones.
We'll see where it goes whenever it releases because, you know, actor strike and writer strike right now.
Yep.
Nothing's on IMDb right now. Nothing is scheduled past September to come out. So Good thing we have all the backlog of movies that
we have a whole
backlog
Excel sheet of
maybe we should not do the franchise thing. We're gonna be doing it for some of these, but we'll see. It's gonna be rough with but Dead Reckoning Part One. What do you give it?
I'm gonna give it a 93.
Jesus Christ.
I really love this movie. Fallout for me, I think, is a 96. Okay, that's still my favorite. I think it's tighter. But this one, fucking, I can't believe we're 7 movies into a franchise and like there's the baseline is 90. Like, how is, you know, how is that possible?
Yeah, you sent this thing in the group chat to me, you and Chris the other day.
It's just, like, don't miss. Like, even Mission Impossible 2, which is kind of considered the worst one.
It's not bad.
It's not terrible. Like, it's at least an 80, right? You know, so it's still a decent watch, you know? So, I love this movement. 93.
I'm way more critical than you. It's not going to get, like, in the 70s or anything. Don't worry. It's not that bad of a movie.
Low 80s?
Yeah, it's an 83. I'm getting an 83. It's a very good movie. It's got a lot of plot holes that I hope maybe it'll change when part two comes out. But right now, the way it is, there's a lot of things that don't make sense to me. But still, the stunts, you can't compete with that shit right now. The stunts and the character development in this movie and the suspense in parts, really well done.
Yeah.
That's why it gets an 83 from me. Yeah, well, I think that's where we'll leave this. Next week, it's time. Oppenheimer.
Oh, yeah. Oppenheimer. Fuck, baby. Dude. I cannot wait for this movie. I'm really hopeful for it because it's like, it's a big budget original story in the midst of the writer strike and actor strike. It's not an original story. It's based on history.
Biopic.
Yeah. But it's Christopher Nolan, a big budget guy, doing this kind of more intimate story.
Still big budget, though.
Yeah. But I think it could really change the tides, especially with Barbie coming out the same day. It could change the tides of what general audiences, or really send a signal to the studios who are in the midst of like creative bankruptcy and now their own workers are fighting against them. Mm-hmm. I think it's a perfect opportunity and perfect time for things to change.
And even... now, even 4 days out as a recording from the release of Oppenheimer, there's still no reviews online. We don't know how this movie is even doing. So, like, it's still being gatekept right now. But, like...
you know the weird thing? I didn't even think about the quality of the movie.
For what?
I didn't even think about, like, am I going to like this movie? What am I going to think of it? Like, I think I'm going to like it. But I just genuinely didn't think of, like, how am I going to critically look at this movie?
It's going to be a lot to talk about. It's a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
And I'm doing the whole Barbenheimer thing, so I'm...
oh, boy, you're in for a treat.
Anyway, we're Seen It Before. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok with the handle at Seen It Before Cast. That's S-C-E-N-E, It Before Cast. And on Twitter with the handle SIB_pod. I'm Dan.
I'm Danny. You can find me on Instagram at Danny_Wass. My letterbox is serialized at DJ Wass. Or my letterbox at DJ... or Danny... wait, what? My YouTube channel is Danny Wass.
Wow, that's a first.
I messed up on that.
Wow.
Oh, also, did you know, little tidbit.
Don't make me leave again.
The little tidbit. That is Morse code. I found out from another podcast. I forgot. I wish I could credit them. But that is Morse code for MI. Two longs, two shorts. Like, two longs is M. Two shorts is I.
Huh.
That's fucking cool.
That's real. I like that.
Right?
Fuck.